This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, our periodic update on the U.S. political landscape. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Washington welcomed French President Emmanuel Macron to Washington, the first official state visit of U.S. President Donald Trump's tenure. He and President Trump have cultivated a special personal bond. Macron hoped to capitalize on that rapport to persuade President Trump not to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal and to reconsider his protectionist trade policies. In an address to a joint session of Congress delivered in impeccable English, Macron elicited cheers and standing ovations from members for his robust defense of the post-World War II liberal world order, democracy, free trade, and the need to curb global warming. We'll also discuss the turmoil surrounding some of President Trump's cabinet officials and nominees, assorted scandals, including the one involving a payment to adult film actress Stormy Daniels to silence her about an alleged sexual encounter she had with Mr. Trump more than a decade ago. We'll also discuss what's behind President Trump's growing frustration with and animus toward Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who is leading a wide-ranging investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential elections and any potential ties with the Trump campaign. And we look at the results of another special congressional election, this time in a very Republican district in the state of Arizona, where Republican Debbie Lesko defeated her Democratic challenger, but by a very narrow margin, in a district that Donald Trump won by more than 20 percentage points. Political handicappers or pundits have been predicting a so-called blue wave, a possible Democratic takeover of the House of Representatives, as more than 40 Republicans, including the relatively young Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, decide not to run for re-election. With us to discuss the tumultuous U.S. political landscape are our two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. And Jim Kessler, he's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And both join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, John Fortier, let's begin with you. Let's start with the Emmanuel Macron state visit. He addressed a joint session of Congress in impeccable English. He waxed rhapsodic about democracy, the rule of law, and the importance of free trade, Paris Climate Accord. Really, in many ways, a rebuke to most of everything that President Trump has articulated, and yet they have a special bond.
I don't think anybody would have thought coming into this presidency that President Trump would have a particularly good relationship with the French president, and I might note the French-Canadian prime minister as well. So I think that's a personal connection, one that Macron has been respectful of Donald Trump. He is an outsider of his own kind, a very different vision than Donald Trump, one that's much more multilateral, one that certainly believes very strongly in the European project. I think there's a sense that France has always been an independent power, and so being able to speak to America and have a kind of relationship with America doesn't mean we agree with them all the time, but it's an interesting phenomenon to see the two of them getting along well enough and Macron to make his points without seeming to get under Donald Trump's skin as a critique.
Jim Kessler, how do you view the speech as well as the visit? To what extent do you think Emmanuel Macron can maybe persuade Donald Trump on some of these very sticky points, the Iran nuclear deal, climate change? And so forth.
This was a very strange week in that it seems like everybody got a win. This was very good for Macron. This was good for Trump. And then Democrats who opposed Trump, they heard Macron's speech in Congress, and it was really a repudiation of Trump, but done in a polite sort of way that Trump would not take offense, and that Democrats could feel like, gee, I wish that guy was our president. I think the significance of this, two things that stand out to me. One is, there's a formula for how foreign leaders can get closer to Trump, which is flattery publicly and then disagree in strong but not personal ways. And the second is we saw a lot of areas where Trump had been extremely hardline where he appeared to move. The Iran deal, TPP, some of the other international areas, perhaps climate, we don't know. And you never know with Trump how long he's going to stick with that. But, you know, this was a successful visit for the French president, and I think Trump enjoyed it too, and Democrats enjoyed it.
Well, let's get back to more mundane topics like cabinet shakeups and nominees who withdraw and et cetera. So, John Fortier, we have Mike Pompeo, CIA director, has been now confirmed by the Senate as the Secretary of State. How do you think that's going to play out?
Well, I think while there was some controversy there, that's actually a pretty good move for Donald Trump. I mean, Mike Pompeo has the trust of the president and is an impressive guy in his own way and is on the same page as the president in a way that Rex Tillerson was very much disconnected from this administration and was not a typical Secretary of State anyway. So while there was controversy as to whether he would get through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, that all worked itself out. There was even some support from some moderate Democrats for that. So I think that's a good choice for Donald Trump, someone who will represent his views and someone who did not know up until recently had been doing some diplomacy with North Korea, which, again, I think no one would have expected Donald Trump might be able to make some openings in North Korea. We'll see what happens. But an important venture that he is already involved in and will be the Secretary of State going forward.
But Jim Kessler, many Democrats and maybe some Republicans worry that he may be too much of a yes man.
Right. I mean, the question with Pompeo is he going to be a rubber stamper? Is he going to be an independent voice that challenges the president? And, you know, Tillerson tried to be that independent voice, but he was a novice in the job and didn't really know how to be a secretary of a cabinet position. Pompeo has had some experience on this. I'm always dubious of any former member of Congress running a cabinet agency. I've worked for members of Congress. They don't really know how to run things, and a lot of times it is a disaster. But the bigger question is, how independent is he going to be? Is he going to challenge the president, or is he not going to challenge the president? Because the president's views definitely need to be challenged, you know, on often occasions there. He's a novice, too, in these areas.
Well, speaking of not knowing how to run things, that brings me to the gentleman who was nominated to be the Veteran Affairs Secretary, Ronnie Jackson. He's the personal doctor of the president. He ran into lots of turmoil, John Fortier. Many criticized him because he's never run a large organization and certainly not the third largest bureaucracy in the U.S. government, which is the Veterans Affairs Agency. And all kinds of things were coming out about him, very disturbing allegations, misconduct, and so forth. What does this say about the way the Trump administration is vetting or not vetting their nominees?
Well, look, I think if we step back and look at this administration, it's not uncommon for other administrations to have nominees with problems and to have difficulty filling slots. We've seen that as a trend over the years. But Donald Trump has fallen, you know, short of his predecessors on that. He is behind in terms of the number of people he has nominated to be in his positions in government. The Senate, for mixed reasons, some of the Democratic opposition, but for other reasons, the Senate has been slow in confirming them. So there are still many positions not confirmed or not filled by the Trump administration. And some of that at least has to do with some mercurial choices and non-vetting. I think he's made some good choices in some places. But this, of course, was an odd choice that a personal physician of the president then turns to be a leader of a cabinet department, which is a really quite a large personnel-wise cabinet department, quite troubled. It wasn't obvious that that was the fit. And what the truth of all the allegations are, we don't know. He's pulled out, but it was certainly controversial just from the type of nomination it was.
Indeed. Well, this nomination, Ronnie Jackson, for Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Jim Kessler, almost seems a bit emblematic of an administration which has been plagued from the beginning with perhaps insufficient vetting of candidates. And we witnessed also last week Scott Pruitt, who is the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency director. He's also mired in scandal, lots of alleged misuse of government funds. He allegedly paid $43,000 for a soundproof telephone booth. He rented an apartment from a lobbyist at a cut-rate deal who has business before the EPA. This doesn't smell quite right.
It doesn't. There's a tension in the Trump administration and with Trump, and that is it loyalty or is it competence? And he is leaning towards loyalty. So he picked Dr. Jackson basically out of a hat. I like this guy. He said I could live to be 200 years old. And it would be like picking your chef to run the United States Department of Agriculture. You know, it just, there's nothing.
An interesting
to
analogy.
Do. Yes. They really have nothing to do with each other, whether you could draw blood or, you know, run a multi-thousand person agency. And this is going on throughout the administration. He's a person who demands loyalty, and competence is really in the back burner. And then vetting, of course, is even further down, because the truth is that if Donald Trump was appointed to some position, he wouldn't be able to pass a vet either. He got elected to be president, but he could not have been vice president. The vetting process, people would have said, like, no chance. So in a way, he rejects the vetting process because he wouldn't be able to pass it himself. That is not a knock on Donald Trump, but it's the fact that he just couldn't get through the own process that we have for other officials who get appointed.
That's a very interesting statement. I guess it shouldn't be surprising in some ways because President Trump said from the beginning that he is not a fan of the federal bureaucracy. He refers to it as the deep state, which, of course, is a total misnomer. We have a bureaucracy, yes. There are some shortcomings, but we are witnessing, it seems, John Fortier, like some kind of an undermining, if not the dismantling of the administrative state, with so many vital positions still open. Ambassadorships, ambassador to South Korea, as we are approaching a potential summit between North Korea and the president. What do you make of these positions that are left open or nominations which don't go anywhere?
Well, look, I think there are a variety of reasons why he is behind on filling positions. The one I think that worried me the most was I think we did hear this argument, especially with regard to the State Department, that perhaps they would not fill positions on purpose so that they could shrink the size of the State Department or shrink the mission. And look, I think that's a very legitimate debate to have as to the size of government and even just as to the way in which we reorganize government or have nominees. But boy, if you're smart, you're going to want your people in place to be doing that. And so that may have been just something one wing of his constituency said. It sounded good to people who are anti-government. But I hope we're not hearing more of that. But it's a very big process, right, with thousands of people, hundreds that have to go before the Senate. And they have just not pushed enough people through the pipeline. And I think that's one big thing, that they just really have not gotten enough people to the Senate quickly enough for some of the secondary positions. And of course, you know, some of the people they picked for the larger positions are having problems of their own.
Well, exactly. They haven't pushed enough people, but Jim Kessler, some critics are saying they're doing this on purpose to some extent because of the contempt with which some in the Trump administration view government.
There's definitely some contempt of government there. And, you know, Steve Bannon, who was one of the original gurus who has been exiled from the White House, was one of those folks that saying, like, look, let's drown this in a tub. There's another issue that's going on, and that is a lot of people don't want to be part of this administration. And if you look about it, I feel like who's going to be the next Anne Boleyn to get beheaded, you know, from King Henry VIII? You get these jobs, you're immediately put in a difficult situation. The president either supports you or doesn't support you. You get fired by a tweet. You know, it's not exactly A-plus recruitment that's going on there. So a lot of folks who are rock-ribbed Republicans are saying, you know, I think I'm going to sit this one out. And I've talked to a lot of Republicans who are sort of on the sidelines and waiting it out a little bit.
So really a dearth of good qualified candidates.
I would broadly agree with that, but I guess I would especially focus on the foreign policy side of this because other constituencies for Donald Trump came around, but the foreign policy establishment, the Republican Party, had been against him from the beginning. Whether it was the more neoconservatives or others, there were very few who signed up. And so he's had a lot of people who he sees as really his opponents, and they see him as an opponent that he does not want in his administration.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And we're discussing the tumultuous U.S. political landscape, and we'll be previewing the midterm elections in November. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find that download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Well, back to our guests. First, back to you, John Fortier, about some of the other scandals that seem to be swirling around the president, the White House. We have this so-called porn star saga, Stormy Daniels. And it's not so much about the impropriety or alleged impropriety or alleged sexual conduct. It's more about that the alleged affair was kept quiet in exchange for cash because that it could have affected Mr. Trump's political fortunes right before the 2016 election. Then there was an FBI raid on President Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, of his residence and workplace. What do you make of these scandals?
Well, look, we don't know all the details. We suspect that for people to go and break the attorney-client privilege that we typically give to information passed between lawyers and their clients, that something is relatively serious. So, look, I think Donald Trump clearly cannot be happy about this. Republicans can't be happy about this. These are investigations that are not good for them. I would say on the other side, though, we do start to see what we always see with investigations like this, and certainly we saw in the Clinton years with the independent counsel there. You know, certainly some criticism of, is this investigation moving away or moving in just many, many directions away from the core of what it was supposed to be investigating? And is it endless? Is it just, let's find everything we can about Donald Trump that's problematic? And that, you know, has certainly resonated with the Republican base. Just as people rallied around Bill Clinton in some ways to think, well, maybe this is a little too far, there is some of that. So while I think it's potentially very problematic, I think the most damning thing for Donald Trump, if it comes out, will be things about Russia and the connection to the election, which is what that special counsel was appointed for. But if people don't see that, there's going to be certainly some feeling on the Republican side of, yes, Donald Trump may have done some dishonorable things, but boy, this guy's getting investigated all over the place, and maybe the mission creep has caused it to be an institution that is problematic.
Well, Jim Kessler, I'm sure you have a different view. Do you think that the investigation into Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential election and potential ties with the Trump campaign is moving too far afield? And this is separate from the so-called adult film actress relationship with Trump, that there are other, ties with the personal lawyer Cohen, of course, Paul Manafort, his former campaign manager. How do you see this investigation going and the threats coming from the White House to potentially fire Robert Mueller, a well-regarded special counsel by both sides of the political aisle? How do you see this going forward?
So first, let me agree with John on one thing. Like John, I believe that the Russian investigation is the most important investigation that's out there. This is really about whether a foreign power, affected our election and colluded with a candidate. We know a foreign power tried to affect our election. To me, in some ways, this is close to an act of war. And so that's a very serious allegation. At the same time, when you're doing an investigation, if you're pulled somebody over for speeding and you find a body, bound in the back seat, you need to investigate that too. And paying off somebody, paying $130,000 in hush money, if you're a presidential candidate before the election, that's pretty serious too. That's more serious than your typical allegation there. Mueller he's a conservative, he's not just conservative politically, he is a conservative prosecutor. So if he is raiding Michael Cohen's office and, violating that attorney-client privilege, there's some serious problems that he thinks, some serious laws that he thinks are broken. And if Trump fires Mueller, then the I word, impeachment word, I think you're going to start hearing, and you might even start hearing it from Republicans.
The impeachment word. Well, that's another topic, John Fortier. That reminds me of an interview that James Comey, the former FBI director, gave to a network here in the context of his book, A Higher Loyalty, in which he talks about his encounters with President Trump and how he felt that he was being manipulated. He had some very harsh words for Mr. Trump, saying that he actually felt he was unfit for the presidency. What about the impeachment process? Should that actually come to pass? Let's say it would probably not happen unless the Democrats take over the House of Representatives, correct?
Well, I do think Jim's point that a firing of Mueller would be a very significant event. I do think as the investigation goes on, if it goes on and on, and one feels that it's moving into other ways, more Republicans will start to feel like, look, this is an endless thing. We need to put it to an end, and we'll feel less charitable to Mueller. But I think for the most part, Republicans in Congress have sent a pretty strong message to the president that this would be a very bad thing. So I don't know that impeachment would absolutely happen with this, but firing Mueller could potentially cause problems even with a Republican Congress. With a Democratic Congress, it could happen, but I think they have a political calculation. Two things. Impeachment is a partly political, partly legal matter, and it means that you really think the president has done something that makes him disqualified for the office. And because of the high bar, the two-thirds that you need to get in the Senate, you have to persuade the other party too. And so some Democrats, even if they take the House, will say, well, of course he should be impeached, and they'll go for it. But if they don't think they can get to the end game, if they don't think Republicans are with them, it might push them politically to seem like they're too far to the left. So I think it's a difficult dance for them. If there were evidence that were very clear about Russian collusion and potentially firing of Robert Mueller would be things that would push in that direction, and certainly Democrats would be much more willing to do the impeachment part. But you have to think about the whole process of persuading both parties to get the two-thirds in the Senate, and that means it has to be somewhat understood across the aisle that it's wrong.
Right, impeachment, then they have to have the
trial
to convict.
In the Senate.
Right, impeachment doesn't mean the person is removed from office. Well, back to you, Jim Kessler, to look at, again, this particular possibility, even though it's far-fetched. But the fact that President Trump has threatened or talked about firing the special counsel or the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein has made some members of Congress from both sides of the aisle willing to propose bills to protect Special Counsel Mueller. but we don't know where this legislation is going. In other words, to prevent the president from firing him.
So legislation to protect Mueller from being fired just passed the Senate Judiciary Committee on a bipartisan vote, and then there's going to be pressure on Mitch McConnell to bring that to the floor of the Senate. He's the Senate Majority Leader, and he decides what gets voted on and what does not get voted on. And then it has to go to the House as well. I don't have real high hopes that this legislation is going to get passed, but I think there's a message that has been sent to the president, certainly by Democrats and by some Republicans, that say, you do this, you fire Mueller, you fire Rosenstein, this could be the end of your presidency. We are going to act to remove you, or to at least consider that. That has not been said publicly by Mitch McConnell. Paul Ryan has hinted at it, the Speaker of the House. They need to make that explicit. That message needs to be loud and clear, because the firing of Mueller is a constitutional crisis for this country. This investigation has to go to its conclusion.
Right. That brings shades of the so-called Saturday Night Massacre with Richard Nixon. Well, as we close, quickly looking forward to the midterms in which Democrats feel the wind at their back. John Fortier, we've talked about this so many times with special elections where Republicans should have prevailed, but the Democrat eked out a win. Now, we had that one in Arizona, which was a very red district. But even so, the Democrat came quite close, gave a run for her money to the Republican who did eke out a win. What does that special election say, if anything, with respect to the upcoming midterms? And do you continue to believe that the Democrats may have a very good shot at taking the majority in the House of Representatives, at least?
I think that election is consistent with the other elections we've seen. It's consistent with a move in the Democratic direction, with strong Democratic enthusiasm resulting in Democrats showing up at the polls. You know, in an election where you have a candidate on the ballot, maybe you're a little divided about that candidate. But boy, the Democratic Party, you know, is united. They don't like Donald Trump. They're going to show up to vote. And Republicans are dispirited some. They're not going to be voting as much. Now, I will say that that's not so unusual. I mean, Donald Trump is unusual in many ways. And he's relatively unpopular, not the most unpopular ever. But of course, we had Bill Clinton losing large number of seats, over 40, losing the House, and Barack Obama losing over 60 seats. It is not uncommon for presidents to lose lots of seats, to be unpopular. And then I will note, not also unpopular for them to come back and win re-election. Those elections are totally separate events. The conditions in 18 could be very different than 20. So I think in a way he looks like a normal, somewhat unpopular president, likely to lose seats. I'd say, you know, a good chance of losing the House and the Senate possibly as well. But certainly a strong move in the Democratic direction for the party out of power.
Were you surprised by Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House's declaration that he wouldn't run again?
It doesn't surprise me that much. And Paul Ryan's a very talented guy. Maybe he'll find his way back into politics, but I think he's looking to be done with it for a little bit.
All right. Well, you get the last word, Jim Kessler, on Paul Ryan's departure, what that says to you and this special election in Arizona, to what extent there's any message there for the Democrats.
Well, Democrats are very optimistic. They should be. 38 House Republicans have already announced the retirement. That's about one-sixth of the entire House caucus, includes Paul Ryan and other very powerful Republicans. That's a sign of pessimism that's out there. It is not abnormal for a president in their first term to lose a bunch of seats. But what is abnormal here is Democrats, because of the way districts are drawn, because of what's called gerrymandering, Republicans have a natural advantage. So for Democrats to win the majority, they actually have to win sort of the aggregate popular vote for this race for Congress by a very large margin, by like 6 percentage points. So winning over the House would mean just very, very large movements in the Democratic direction. And the question is that the beginning of a realignment when people are saying, look, I'm done with this Republican Party? Because Trump is different than Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, who lost. Like, he's brought his own revolution to this. So that's the question, whether there's some sort of realignment that's going on. But I think Democrats are going to win the House and have a real shot at the Senate.
I'm afraid on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, terrific conversation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Wojtek Zorniak. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.